Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we'll be interviewing two individuals, Keyshawn Johnson, throw me the damn ball. Love Key, man. Outspoken wide receiver, former USC Trojan, and Bob Glauber. But before we get to our guest, I wanted to talk about this drone strike in Afghanistan back in August as we were drawing that killed 10 Afghani civilians. The Pentagon has recently acknowledged that the drone strike was a mistake. I mean, understatement. First, I don't think I can recall an administration ever admitting that they got a drone strike wrong, but I'm sure it's not the first time that this has happened. I know President Biden has taken a lot of shots about how he withdrew from Afghanistan, and some of it was deserved. But this drone strike is yet another example to me of at least when we got the policy right in ending the war, even if the withdrawal itself was more chaotic than it should have been. When you get out of the nation building business, like I hope we are, hopefully the drone strike should end too. And with less drone strikes, there's less opportunity for this type of tragic error. Now, there has to be accountability. People need to be fired. Generals need to be gone. But I think Americans should be particularly concerned about these strikes as they are very rarely on target for their intended targets, but they often come with significant civilian deaths. So my hope is that this is the last time we'll see this type of tragic error. May the 20 individuals who lost their lives, may their memory all be a blessing. And that's that on that.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Man, today is a special episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. We have two awesome Hall of Famers in their own right. Let me just go ahead and throw that out there. We have Bob Glauber. Did I get that right, Bob?
You did. Thank you.
There we go. And Keyshawn Johnson. What's going on, Key? How you doing today, man?
I'm good. I'm just, taking it all in. It's a big Sunday football night yesterday, and watched all of that. Now I'm just enjoying Monday because I have to watch Green Bay Packers and Detroit Lions.
God, I don't know. There's actually a guy out there. This is a true story. There's a guy who put $25 down on a 16-team parlay that has he hit 15 of them so far, and he has to win Detroit Lions tonight, money line bet. So there are a lot of individuals, and he wins $737,000. Off a $25 bet. So there are a lot of people tonight who are going to be watching the Detroit Lions as well, or pulling for them. Bob, before we get too deep into all of this, I wanted to introduce you guys to my listeners. And so, Bob, you've been a football writer at Newsday since 1992. Why did you decide on a career in covering football, and what keeps you in the business this long?
That's a good question. And actually, my first season covering the NFL was 1985. So I went to Newsday in 89 and became columnist in 92. And I never find it boring. I never find it boring because it's a people sport. And I get to meet people like Keyshawn Johnson, like Bill Parcells, like Tom Brady, like Bill Belichick. I mean, and I have the benefit of history in that I knew Bill Belichick when he actually, spoke to people and was, fun loving and jovial and asked how your family.
I don't know that person. Yeah. I don't know now, who that is.
Now, right? No, nobody does. But I see Bill Belichick and he'll smile, and because we go back when he was not known, certainly as Bill Belichick is today. But so I am passionate about covering it. It's fun. It's never boring, and it's always different, and it's always interesting.
Key, so you were in the league and for a number of years, but when you were in the league, did you always know that this would be the next chapter of your life? Television, commentating, being an author, all of these things. Did you know this was next?
Not necessarily. I mean, I figured I'd probably get into some television stuff when my career winded down, but nothing significant. because I was still playing. So I really didn't know where it would go. I just know that I knew that I would be doing something for somebody.
How did that transition work? I know we hear the stories all the time about NFL players having trouble transitioning to the post-NFL life because, hell, you guys have been playing football since you're 4 or 5 years old. It's all you know. How was that transition for you into this new role where now there's an entire generation of people that don't know the shit-talking wide receiver who wanted to catch absolutely everything, but they know you instead as a debonair commentator on the sport? How was that transition?
It's been fine. A lot of guys think that it's easy, I guess, and they want to get into it, but don't realize the amount of work that goes into being, you know, having the platform and being the guy that a network looks to reestablish something. They think it's just, oh, I'm getting up and I'm going to talk about football or sports because I played it. There's actually a lot of work that goes into it, especially for me, because I also work on the production side of what we do, not just the talent side. So, you know, it's one of those deals, man, where you got to, you know, once your playing career is over with, or start to wind down, you got to have an exit strategy and a plan.
That's a true story. So let's talk about The Forgotten first. Why did you two decide to write this book, and what do you want your audiences to get out of it? I'll let either one of you all chime in on that, because I'm really interested in this combination that's come together. I mean, this is like, if y'all two were wrestlers, y'all could win the WWE championship. This is a hell of a tag team.
I don't know about that, but I would say that Bob is the writer and he's the brain trust behind everything. And I'm just a guy who's piggybacking off of Bob.
No, come on now. Come on.
You know, it's a story that needed to be told. And a lot of us that are Black, or even those that are not Black, that grew up in a sports era, you didn't know about the Forgotten Four. We know about Jackie Robinson, obviously, and Jesse Owens, because those stories are told to us on a daily in school, where the Forgotten Four hasn't been told, right? You don't hear about Kenny Washington or Woody Strode or Marion Motley, Bill Willis. None of that is told. You don't know about George Preston Marshall unless you are following the Washington football team and know their history. So for me, given all the different things that we've gone on for the last several years in our country, this is an important part of history that hasn't been told, that was kind of like, you know, just buried and brushed aside. It falls in the lines with the Black Wall Street of Tulsa. 100 years of those sort of things never been told to us in our classroom. So hopefully writing this book in conjunction with Bob on this project will open up a lot of eyes and get people to pay attention to it.
You bring up a good point. You actually transitioned into my next question. You almost answered it. But Bob, I want you to chime in here. You know, he mentioned Jackie Robinson. Like, I know who integrated baseball, right? Mm-hmm. I know the whole story about it. Jackie Robinson wasn't even the best baseball player in his own league when they brought him over, right? Hell of a baseball player. But there's an argument that there were many who were better. We know those stories, but for some reason, even I have to Google who integrated football and basketball. Why do you think there's such a lack of awareness? What does that stem from? And thank both of y'all for this. Has been one of the best books I've read all year. So thank you for that.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. It's a passion of ours. And I think there are a few reasons. It's a complicated reason for why this is not told more. Part of it is that, you know, unlike baseball, where Jackie Robinson, that was a purposeful decision by Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, to sign Jackie Robinson. Branch Rickey knew there would be a lot of blowback by that. With the Forgotten First, you know, integration was kind of forced on the NFL in 1946 with Kenny Washington and Woody Strode joining the Rams. And if anyone is the Branch Rickey of this story, it's Paul Brown of the Cleveland Browns, who brought in Bill Willis and Marion Motley willingly, purposely, did it quietly, did not make a big deal like Branch Rickey did with Jackie Robinson, but knew what he was doing. So it's kind of an awkward, clunky, messy beginning that gets to where we are today, where 70% of the NFL is African-American. But that beginning was a little difficult. and awkward, and football was not the biggest sport at the time. So I think a combination of factors leaves this story with guys like you and me Googling, hey, who's the first black player in the modern? I'm serious. Yeah. Like, I'm a football writer. I should know this, but I didn't know it. And I'm like, you know what? I bet you a lot of people don't know it. And Keyshawn and I spoke last August, and I ran this idea past him. And, you know, within 2 minutes, he was like, hey, this is pretty interesting. And then another thing I told him that really resonated with both of us, I said, Key, you know that Kenny Washington played high school football no more than 10 miles from where you played high school football in Los Angeles, and Woody Strode as well. And he's like, I never knew that. Like, nobody knows that. So this is a good opportunity to tell this story and four guys who really deserve a lot of historical recognition. And hopefully this will help get it.
What has the NFL done to honor these men? Because I feel like a part of why we don't hear about them as much as Major League Baseball or other organizations is because, you know, they have a 42 day. Everybody wears number 42. What has the NFL done? And if they haven't done anything, why haven't they?
That's a really good question. And
I think they will get around to it. I think this is a new changing of the guard, so to speak. It's like a new era, right? You look at where we were in the past, the way things were being done. And then all of a sudden, in the last 18 months, the world has been turned upside down.
Correct.
And eyes have been opened. And people feel different now than they did 18 months ago about everything in life. So I think as you start to see the NFL and Roger Goodell and Troy Vincent in a leadership role, you'll start to see things get attention paid to a little bit more. You know, attention will be paid to things that attention wasn't paid to before because they didn't have to. Mm. Now it's almost like, if you don't, we know what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I'll add to that, Key. I honestly don't know, Bakari, if like I think this book, and I'm not being self-absorbed or self-centered with it, but I don't think the NFL was really aware that
what I was going to say. I mean, I don't think they were willingly hiding anything. I just don't think people knew. I mean,
yes, exactly. Even the NFL doesn't know. This is the 75th anniversary. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you, next year, Major League Baseball will make a huge deal out of Jackie Robinson's 75th anniversary of breaking the color barrier in baseball. There's no doubt. They do it every year. All the players wear number 42 on one day in April every year. But the names of these four men who reintegrated the modern, you know, world of pro football, they're forgotten. And that's why that title kind of works. They are the forgotten first to reintegrate the NFL. And hopefully they kind of get their just due moving forward.
Let me ask both of you this question. Every book changes the author who writes it. Every time you write a book, it changes you. And I'm sure this book is no different. How did this book change each of you and help realign your orientation around the work that you do now?
I don't know if it realigned anything for me, to be honest with you, just because I've always been a fan of certain history, especially when it comes to being black and understanding the road that we've traveled to get to the place that we are at today. The only thing I think for me it's going to be able to do is try to help educate others and talk to other people about things that we don't know about in our own history. Because to me, this is a part of our history and part of my history because of the NFL. But it's part of our history as being black. Again, I didn't learn about Tulsa and Black Wall Street until 18 months or so ago.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't something that was taught growing up in high school or college. It just, nothing was ever mentioned.
I'll tell you, and you know, Key has mentioned to me before about like George Preston Marshall, the level of racist he was. Neither of us knew exactly how that that was, and that was huge. I was moved at a lot of levels. First of all, getting to know the families of these players, and they were really willing and generous with their time. They kind of carry the, I don't want to say the scars of the lack of recognition, but they're all very aware of it. And just to know where the NFL came from to mm-hmm. where it is now, it's fascinating. Because that's why, like, how does this come about? I'm like standing in the locker room at the Giants thinking, you know, this is a really diverse sport. Okay, how did it get that way? Because in the time I've been covering it, it's gotten more diverse. And then you go back and say, wow, there was a period of 12 years where there were no black players in the NFL. And it was purposeful, you know, it wasn't written, but that's a fact. And four guys did a lot to kind of set the stage for where we are today, where we take it for granted that, you know, the league is predominantly black right now.
Yeah, man, I'd be interested to see how many GMs and head coaches actually know this history. I know many of them will read the book now, the Dabos of the world. The Nick Saban, Nick probably knows, but the Dabos of the world and many others, I'm sure now will be compelled to read this book, as will the Lamar Jacksons of the world. I want them to feel proud of where they come from. And I think this book goes a long way. While I have both of you all here, they're no better experts in one of the sports that I love. So let's talk a little football while I have you guys here. And one of the major things that I wanted to discuss with you is COVID. And how COVID has somewhat changed the landscape. As a journalist who reports on the game, and Keyshawn, as a former player, how is the issue of vaccination status affecting the league and locker rooms? And that leads into my next question, which is everybody got hurt, and Cam Newton is the best thing sitting on the sideline. So I wanted to ask, why is that the case?
You know, I don't think that it's doing anything to the locker room. When you're inside the locker room, everybody have their own views on gender, race, religion, everybody's got their own views. You don't talk about certain things in the locker room because it's not your business, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't get caught up. Like if I was in the locker room and there was an individual that wasn't vaccinated, I'd have a conversation with him about why I did it, but I wouldn't have a conversation about why he didn't do it or isn't going to do it, because it wouldn't be important to me to understand why he feels a certain way. It wouldn't be important to me because that's his feelings. He feels a certain way about the science. I feel a certain way about science. He feels a certain way about eating chicken. I feel a certain way about eating chicken. He likes convertible cars. I don't. So you just don't, you know, one guy is Catholic. Another dude is Baptist. One dude is Jewish. Another dude is Christian. So I don't get caught up in those things inside of a locker room. I think in terms of the league, the way they're handling it, I understand it. I get it. It's a corporation and they're into making money. And anytime you're going to jeopardize making money, then you're putting yourself in a bad situation, because they're saying to themselves, if I put you out there on the field in our locker room and you're not vaccinated, you're not handling the protocols the way that they're supposed to, and you becoming reckless, then you jeopardize us. And all of a sudden, everything else that we're supposed to be playing for gets jeopardized. So therefore, they're shutting down stadiums and forfeiting, and I'm losing money. So I get it. I mean,
Let me ask you this, just to push back ever so gently. You said it ain't none of your business, but at the end of the day, it is business. I mean, let's imagine your starting quarterback doesn't get the vaccine and y'all are 7-8. It's the last Sunday in the season. And, you know, your quarterback has to sit out now because he didn't get vaccinated and he has a special protocol. I mean, so that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's not my business to tell him to get vaccinated. The only thing I can do is give him the information that I gathered to put myself in a position to be vaccinated. And in the end, I feel strong about it. I trust the science. I trust the guys with the white jackets and the pens. Some people don't have enough of the information. And if they do have the information, they don't fully understand it. So therefore, I can't force them to do it. I'm not going to beat their head in because they decide not to do it. That's when I say it's not my business. It's like, okay, here's why I did it, and it worked for me, but if it doesn't work for you, none of my business. You've got to answer to the owners. You've got to answer to the NFL, the NFLPA. Y'all going to have to deal with that because I've already tried. I've given my point of view.
In your 30 plus years, Bob, in the business, have you seen the league have to adjust to anything like they are today? Or even over the last 18 months, the adjustment that the league has had to go through and the kind of morphosis that they've gone through, have you seen anything like this?
No, I have not seen anything this convulsive, for lack of a better word, in terms of social justice. They were caught so flat-footed with the anthem controversy back in 2018, and they changed, they evolved to the point where they're supporting their players now, where they were against the players. And in terms of COVID, I mean, there's been nothing like this in the world.
Yeah.
Right. And they have done a remarkable job of adjusting, getting an entire season in last year against all odds without vaccines. It was incredible. Now let's not lose sight of the fact that they're into making money and they needed that season to happen to set up these gargantuan television contracts that they signed. This is a multi-billion dollar industry, and that was their purpose. But they used the science to their advantage, and I think they did some good for the country in showing how you can kind of get out and be functional during a pandemic.
I mean, who would ever guess that the Raiders are functional? I mean, the Raiders, they're leading the way. Shout out to the Davis family and the Las Vegas Raiders and everything that they're doing about ensuring the safety of people and having butts in the seats all at the same time. The functional Raiders. Like, Key, let me ask you a question about Cam Newton. Why isn't he on a team right now? Do you think it stems from vaccination or the fact that being a backup is the juice not worth the squeeze, to use an old Southern saying, having Cam Newton as a backup back there, it may bring too much attention to what's not happening on the field.
A little bit of I think a lot of it might be the vaccination. You got to understand, Cam Newton is a minimum player. He's not Kirk Cousins and he's not Derek Carr. If he had those contracts, then he probably would be on a team because they would figure out a way to make it right. But
Carson Wentz ain't been vaccinated. He got COVID, still ain't vaccinated, and he's still out there running around. So you're right.
Well, because of the money, the money. And, you know, when you got big ticket items, certain things, you know, God, people going to do certain things. But when you only account for $3.5 million of real money, in the NFL, that ain't nothing. But when you account for $70 million of real money, no matter how much money the owners have, they're not cutting it. They'll figure out how to isolate themselves and take the risk of the team being shut down opposed to somebody that makes a little bit of money. You know, Washington football team, why they haven't signed Cam, I have no idea. One could only speculate.
Your coach had cancer, and your quarterback can't be unvaccinated with your coach just in chemo last year. I mean, I think that's the answer to that one.
Well, yeah, but remember, he didn't have cancer. I mean, we didn't have vaccinations a year ago when Cam was free to do whatever he wanted to last spring.
Correct.
They didn't sign him, and they had the opportunity to sign him.
And
it had nothing to do.
You're right.
It had nothing to do with COVID back then. So I don't want to speculate and say, well, Ron Rivera had cancer, so he don't want to sign Cam, but he didn't want to sign him last year in the offseason, and he had just had Cam. So I think that's a little bit different from what their thought process is.
Fair enough, Bob. Are you paying attention to what's going on? Or are you on a book tour? Making sure people know us.
My day job is Tuesday football columnist.
You better pump those articles out, man. Look, what are the three teams that have surprised you so far in any direction, being good or bad?
surprise. I guess the Raiders would be a surprise, but I will tell you, 2 weeks is still a mirage in this league. Give me a month, give me 6 weeks, and then I'll fall in love with you, all right? Because we saw this from the Raiders last year, and we've seen it in years past. So I'll count them as one.
This is different, Bob. This is different, though.
Why?
This is different. This Why? Raider team is different than the ones that we saw go 6-2 last year. They just beat two pretty good defenses in a hostile environment. When they went on the road and beat a Pittsburgh team that thumped a Buffalo Bill team a week before, with no Jacobs in the backfield, no Josh Jacobs in the backfield. It's just a different – it just feels different. It feels like they're going to come out on the better end of this one.
Right.
And David Carr looks like a real quarterback back there. Now, can he be consistent through 16?
That's it.
Or is he going to turn
– Show me midseason, Key, and we'll have this discussion again. And I'll know if you win or lose.
Yeah, that's just like everybody saying Carr's no good.
Carr's good.
There's no way he's a top five quarterback in the league. I'm like, what are you talking about? All his numbers do is speak to that. His numbers are the same as everybody else's. The part of the problem is when you set a narrative about somebody or a team, people tend to follow that. And when people set the narrative that the Raiders aren't good, people follow that and never give them the benefit of the doubt because they haven't been good in the last several years.
Yeah, several. Let me ask you this. Since you're throwing out numbers and you're talking about top five, you know, I'm a Falcons fan and my quarterback puts up top five numbers every year and we can't win with him. We also can't do anything. You can't go out and draft. You can't get a free agent quarterback.
It ain't him. The defense sucks. Okay. And they ran out of options. So it's not him. It's not Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan can't play defense. He's not the one surrendering leads. It's just like Derek Carr. Derek Carr's not the – now that their defense is better, the Raiders' defense is better than it was in the past. It's better. It's actually factually better.
Hmm. Carr, you're in for – I hope you're patient because you're in for a bit of a wait here with the Falcons.
Since it was 21-3 and we decided not to run the ball in the second half, it has not been. We ran the ball four times in the second half of that Super Bowl.
I was there.
I don't even want to.
Sorry.
I don't even want to talk about it. Key, let me ask you this. Before I let you go, I got two more questions for you guys. I know you guys are busy and I'm so thankful that you all have taken out time. I want people to remember that the reason that we're here and I'm just talking football with them because I get to talk shit on my own show is the Forgotten First, which is an amazing piece of history, man. They should use this book in sports journalism schools around the country and journalism schools around the country. But Key, who should be USC's next coach? And help me understand how a juggernaut like USC that's in LA with the NIL and everything like that, and it's a fertile recruiting territory, isn't always dominant. What has happened to Southern California?
Nothing really, other than we can't figure out how to win the big important games. They've won a lot of games under Clay Hill. They just can't figure out how to beat the big boys, right? They couldn't figure out how to beat Ohio State, Alabama. You know, they got thumped. They got thumped by, I believe it was Iowa in a bowl game. And that's just not USC. But he did win a lot of games there. I mean, he beat Penn State in a Rose Bowl, but then he just never got a chance to win those other bowl games or those open college day bowls. We were not going anywhere. We were losing a team that we shouldn't lose to, like a Stanford team the other day. And as far as a coach goes, I have no idea. This is a long season on evaluating coaches and names are going to be thrown out there and everybody's going to speculate if it's James Franklin, if it's not James Franklin, is it Eric Bieniemy, is it not Eric Bieniemy? That's just what's going to happen over the next several months.
Is it Keyshawn Johnson?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
I mean, shit, if we're going to break news, is it Keyshawn Johnson?
I'm good. I'm not the right hire for them.
You do know James Franklin is a home run. James Franklin is a home run. I mean, James Franklin, I wanted James Franklin at South Carolina so bad. But
yeah,
I
don't know that he's a home run. I'm not willing to just say he's a home run. It ain't like he's been lighting the world on fire at Penn State either.
He don't have the same resources y'all got at USC. He won at Vanderbilt.
He got the same resources.
No.
He does. What resources he got that's different than the resources in Clemson?
Clemson, I mean, that's a whole different. I don't even like talking about Clemson football. I'm a Gamecock. I'm SEC. I don't even think y'all play real football in a Pac-12.
What's the difference? What's the difference in the resources?
They have. I mean, they started winning. So I mean, they when they started winning, now their resources are second to none. Their athletic.
You don't think Penn State has a nice weight room facility, nice dorm room.
It's decent, but I mean,
New Jersey area. They can recruit nationally. It's a national brand. Well, I mean, New Jersey and Pennsylvania is a hotbed for recruits.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's a hotbed for recruits.
It's a second tier hotbed for recruits. I mean, it ain't Georgia, Florida.
You can pluck a dude out of Florida every now and then. You can pluck somebody out of California. I think he got resources. I'm just saying, it ain't like, you know, you asking Nick Saban to come. So I get it. Brother man is good. He's been doing a good job.
And he also won at Vanderbilt. He won at Vanderbilt in the SEC. He won games. He took Vanderbilt, of all places, to a bowl game. Last question for you guys.
He just haven't been able to get over the hump at Penn State to me.
That's true. Last question for you guys. Does anybody beat Alabama in football this year? Or does anybody beat Tampa Bay? I mean, I know they beat them, but does somebody supplant them as being champions? I'm not saying Tampa Bay is going 20-0, but it looks like with Tom Brady back there tossing that thing around, like he's 30 again, they look really, really good. So does anybody upstage Tampa Bay or Alabama this year?
Well, I'll take Tampa to me is potentially fallible. Listen, they're going great and Brady's feeling good at 44. He's incredible. The guy wants to play to 50. So the NFC is so top heavy this year, just a handful of teams. I thought the Packers, I still think the Packers can make a decent run, but Rodgers has got to get his head together and get his mind right. I think it's right. But I love the AFC. I think the AFC is going to be so battle tested by the time the Super Bowl comes around. You saw that game, Kansas Last City, night. Baltimore. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Wow. So that's really good football. So I'll say Tampa Bay can be upset. Nick Saban, no. That's so many damn good players.
They just roll them out. Key, yep. Your thoughts?
Hey, man, it's going to be tough for me to pass on Alabama right now. I don't care how Georgia looked defensively and whatnot. It's Alabama's to lose as far as I'm concerned. Maybe Georgia can do something with them. Maybe Oregon can do something with them. But I don't know, man. They just strong.
Yeah, they roll them out there. And I think, I mean, you were talking about the AFC, but the NFC West is a hell of a football conference.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah.
I mean, from top to bottom. Who does anybody upstage the Buccaneers, Key? And I know that's
– Yeah, that pro football is different, man.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You know, it's going – even though Kansas City just lost, Kansas City going to be in it. Baltimore going to get their rhythm. We don't know what Seattle going to be in the end. Arizona might just all of a sudden be a wonder – type team this year, the Rams. I mean, it's all, you just don't know. The NFL is so different than college football.
Well, fellas, I both have a great deal of respect. It's been a pleasure having you both on. Amazing penmanship and writing, amazing idea. This story needs to be taught more often. Thank you both for coming on the Bakari Sellers podcast. I appreciate and love all the work that both of you guys are doing. So thank you and God bless you both.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Before I let you go, I wanted to talk about last week's California recall. In case you missed it, California Governor Gavin Newsom avoided a recall handily by a margin of almost 30 points. How you doing, Larry Elder? Predictably, national political media tried to frame Newsom's recall, one where COVID and Republican overreach were center stage. And they sought to portray this race as the playbook for Democrats in 2022. In fact, I would say, dare I say, they're wrong. We're always in a rush to nationalize races, but in a year as the incumbent party where we hold the White House and Congress, we shouldn't. Democrats have to make their positive case for why they deserve more power and what they've done with the power they have. And what that looks like for Sherry Beasley in North Carolina or Tim Ryan in Ohio will and should look very different than Newsom's race. A hyper local focus on voters' pockets in their neighborhoods with an occasional reminder that Republicans aren't up to doing the task is probably the play, and that won't look like this recall campaign in California. And it should look different in every race because the Democratic brand is received very differently across the spectrum. Democrats, ignore the noise and run your race. And that's that on that. We'll see you guys on Thursday.